All right, on this episode of Bouts Talking Bouts, truly elated to be talking to an individual who is a legendary individual, a two-division UFC champion, multi-time title holder in both categories, nowadays making some big waves in the acting world, also doing some commentary for the PFL. I'm talking to Randy the Natural Couture. How are you doing, man? Seems like your day's going pretty good so far, getting out and about and everything.
Absolutely. It's going to be a great weekend. Up here in Quad Cities on the Iowa-Illinois border. It's our third annual motorcycle poker run up here for my foundation for wounded veterans. So it's going to be a great weekend.
Yeah, it sounds like an awesome effort there, man, for sure. But towards the end of that intro there, I mentioned some of the PFL work that you've been doing. And normally, Kenny Florian on the other side of you and everything like that, but Chael Sonnen kind of manning that position one of the last times out there, a longtime Team Quest compatriot. What was it like to, you know, analyze a PFL broadcast with old JLP there?
That was a blast. We had a lot of fun. It felt very comfortable. Of course, it always feels really comfortable with Kenny as well, but that's the first time I've gotten to call fights with Chael, and I've obviously known Chael for a very, very long time. He's a great friend, so it was fun. We had a great time poking each other and calling the fights.
Yeah, it was a great card overall and just parlaying itself into what should be a great event wrapping things up. You know, PFL 10, October 27th. I mean, just so many of, you know, these great championship bouts to follow along with. I really don't even know where to start with it, though. But, I mean, just some interesting individuals throughout the field for sure and everything like that. Is there a certain tournament final that's particularly catching your eye here? Or are you having a similar situation as me? Like, it's like, damn, do I go with the women's lightweight here? Like, is it the best at the men's lightweight? What do we got?
Yeah, well, I mean, every single weight class has been a lot of fun to be involved in and watch these guys and gals get after it. Obviously, we're excited for Taylor Guardado in the women's division. She's certainly going to have her hands full with Kayla Harrison, but big step up for Taylor, and she's had an amazing season, just kind of grinding out three victories to get into the final. So we're excited for her from Extreme Couture. Obviously, we've got a plethora of guys from all over the globe, 22 countries represented. You know, the Dagestanis, obviously, in force. I think we've got Movlid Habibulayev and Magomed Kirmov, both in the finals from Dagestan. Those guys are stellar athletes, stellar wrestlers, and great fighters. So they're absolutely fun to watch. It's been a really unique season. If you'd have told me there wasn't going to be a Lance Palmer or a Nathan Schulte going into the finals for season three, I would have laughed. But, you know, it's the way things go in the PFL. Nobody's protected. You've got to earn your spot. And those guys ran up against some pretty tough characters early in the regular season and didn't make it to the playoffs. So pretty remarkable. We'll see new champs, you know, in those divisions, which is going to be really cool.
Yeah, it's good to shake up some of the preconceived kind of notions, like you were saying, because I think maybe there was a certain segment of people who are like, oh, you know, Nathan Schulte and Lance Palmer are just going to, like, you know, cash tournament checks the rest of their life. But then it's like, oh, not so much. Bit of a roadblock right from the jump. So it just goes to show that it's, like, you know, an unpredictable sort of thing there. But I'm kind of wondering from the, I guess, analyst perspective with some of the, you know, different facets. And as far as, like, you know, seeing Ante D'Elia in there against Bruno Capoloza, a guy in Ante D'Elia who's, you know, being mentored by Mirko Krokop, who's like a heavyweight compatriot back in the day there. Like, how cool is it to see those kind of dynamics and, like, just unfurling, I guess, generations in the sport, as it were?
Yeah, well, there was a lot of hype around Ante when we were able to sign him with the PFL. There was a few other promotions out there chasing him. He had a lot of hype around him. And then to go out in his first regular season fight and get knocked out by Capoloza was pretty remarkable. We were shocked. So the fact that he's getting a rematch for all the marbles this time is pretty cool. I think it's going to be a great fight. Capoloza's on fire. I mean, he's just explosive, moving up from 205. I think it was a great move for him. And he said from day one, he said, look, these heavyweights aren't going to be able to deal with my speed. And he's lived up to that. It's been pretty impressive. So, Rory McDonald kind of grinding it out and getting through and getting to the finals. Yeah, we had great expectations, and a lot of people did, of him coming into the PFL in his first season. And, you know, Ray Cooper getting the fight again as a finalist and getting a rematch with Magomed Kerimov, who he lost to in the finals in season one.
Yep.
So a lot of interesting matchups. You know, obviously, Kayla Harrison moves to 10-0 now, or actually 11-0 now in her MMA career, and is on track, you know, to try and back-to-back championships for the Professional Fighters League. And just been very, very impressed with her diligence and what she's brought to the cage in her transition from being a great judoka to being a well-rounded mixed martial artist.
Yeah, a bit ago you'd mentioned Extreme Couture, though, and I mean, not that it ever went through any kind of like lull period necessarily, but it seems like there's like another banner era with the gym as of late. Like for me, it kind of harkens back to the days of, you know, when you were prominently competing, like Gina Carano, a lot of these names. Do you feel that kind of sentiment too? Like it seems like Extreme Couture is very much going through a boom period these last few years.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. You know, when I retired from the sport, a lot of the guys scattered. Went to different gyms, went to different places. I wasn't in there grinding out camps. And we went through a little lull. And we brought in Dennis Davis. And with the help of Robert Paulus, they really kind of, and my son, Ryan, managing the gym, Eric Nixick, they've just kind of done a great job of rebuilding that family culture and that fight culture in Extreme Couture. And we are on fire right now with Frances Ngannou in there. Misha Tate coming back out and doing so well in her first fight in almost 5 years. Just a plethora of great athletes in their training. Certainly a number of PFL athletes as well. But across the board, all the promotions, we've got guys fighting in every single promotion in the sport. So it's been really, really awesome to see.
Yeah, you kind of touched on just like, you know, when you retired there a little bit, though. And I guess I'm curious because like when you hung up the gloves, just a very, you know, defined decision and, you know, not necessarily casting aspersions here, but a lot of the contemporaries of yours that retired, you know, getting the itch, subsequently coming back thereafter. And I could understand the compulsion to want to return. But I guess my question is, like, how did you, I guess, reach that sort of closure point where you're just like, ah, you know, I had my legacy. I'm not necessarily going to get the itch to get back out there and, you know, do the thing, as it were.
Yeah, I just think it was time for me. You know, I retired for a little bit when I was going through the divorce, just didn't feel like myself and wasn't competing at the level I felt like I was used to competing at. I'd lost twice to Chuck and the second and third Chuck fights, and I stepped away. The divorce settled, and I kind of came back to feeling like myself again. I came back out to fight Tim, you know, for the heavyweight championship at 44, and most people thought I was insane, but, you know, obviously, you know, rode it for another 3 years, got some great fights in and had a blast. But I felt like during the James Toney camp, every old injury that I'd ever had kind of flared up during that camp for no particular reason. And it was the first time the thought entered my mind that it was my body telling me, hey, look, you might want to think about doing something else for a living. And I think once you start having that conversation in your own head, it's time to seriously consider doing something else. It's a tough way to make a living, grinding out camps, going out, you know, in front of everybody and potentially, you know, well, fighting your heart out. And it's definitely not for the faint of heart. And it just felt like it was time for me. I wanted to go out on my own terms, not have some doctor or some promoter telling me I shouldn't do it anymore. And I feel pretty comfortable. It took me about a year to come to terms with that decision and that conversation. And once I walked away, I felt like it was the right move.
Yeah, you seem like a pretty cerebral, contemplative individual, at least like based on the things you posted on Instagram and continue to post some pretty insightful kind of stuff. And I think that's cool in as far as like how you articulate that to some of your, I guess, fellow athletes too. Like Rashad Evans had a cool, you know, story that I was reading about how you'd eased his stresses leading into the Liddell fight there. Can you kind of talk about that, just being able to, I guess, provide that kind of wisdom and insight and stuff like that? Or is it just an individual pursuit of learning more and you don't necessarily even look at it through that lens per se?
Well, I think a couple of things play into that mindset. Number one, being a foreign language and literature major in college and having a degree in literature, having read a lot of those classics through college, you know, changed the way I looked at the world a little bit. Certainly wearing that uniform for 6 years in the Army before I went to college created a particular mindset and a mentality. Having the good fortune of being able to work with a sports psychologist with the national wrestling team, with USA Wrestling, for a number of years, helped me refine and develop some mental skills. That's what I call it, mental skills training, learning to control that little voice in our head. And that we control that voice. That voice does not control us. That's the voice that starts chattering, especially when the pressure gets turned on and you've got a fight, you know, you're a week out from a fight and the media is going and you know, that little voice wants to start questioning whether or not you're going to do the right things or if you're in good enough shape and all those kind of things that have a tendency to undermine your confidence. And that's certainly where Rashad was at that week going into that fight with Chuck. And we just sat down and talked about those mental skills, putting that proper frame around it. The people that really matter, they don't care whether you win or lose. Your family, your loved ones, they just want you to be happy. They certainly want you to be successful. At the end of the day, they don't really want you to get hurt. But they don't really care whether you win or lose. And anybody else that cares whether you won or lose, lost that fight, doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things, honestly. But finding that proper perspective to free yourself up from that fear of failing, that fear of going out there and not getting it done, so that you can go out there and do exactly what you trained to do. Now, certainly there's no guarantee that you're going to win. It's that kind of sport. I think that's why we all love MMA, because sometimes you don't know who's going to win. And the style matchups and everything else that play into it. So finding that mental framework that frees you up from that stress and that butt pucker that you're going to go out there and lose, to go out there and do exactly what you trained to do, is a big part of it. The mental skills it takes to embrace an individual combative sport like this one is a big challenge. I think it's one of the toughest things anybody can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate you giving me those insights. But just talking about the benefits the amateur wrestling gave to the mindset there and everything like that, it seems like you're dipping a bit into the pro wrestling as of late there, just with the Manson Brothers Midnight Zombie Massacre and your role as Thump Hansen in that movie there. Can you kind of talk about that? Just getting to, I guess, you know, do the acting jobs in the context of playing a pro wrestler. Like, how was that whole dynamic there?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, first of all. It was a great cast of guys. You know, Mike Carey and Chris Margetis came out with a great script. It's funny. It's very tongue-in-cheek. We don't take ourselves too seriously. Crossing, you know, zombies and pro wrestling, which, yeah. I mean, what could go wrong there? Max Martini did a great job of directing. He's somebody I've known for 20 years through acting. Got to play in a couple episodes of The Unit when he was on The Unit on TV, and we became friends then. So he reached out to me and asked if I'd be interested in playing a role in this fun movie. I read the script. They said, oh, yeah, we're going to shoot in Santa Fe. I said, yeah, I'm in. This sounds like a blast. So was really excited a couple weeks ago in Chicago at a horror festival to see the finished product and see the result, see the fans just kind of go crazy over this film. It's really a lot of fun. And who knew, you know, we shot this about 2.5 years ago, a year before anybody knew what COVID was.
Yeah.
And the pretense for this film is that, you know, these guys are taking bad growth hormone from China and it causes them to go crazy.
Okay, yeah.
Zombies. So, you know, is that art imitating life or what? It was a little surreal when a year later we're all locked down and in quarantine and everything. So, but a fun film coming out here, I think, on the 16th of this month. It'll be in some limited theaters and you'll be able to find that on the digital platforms.
Yeah, conceptually, the movie seems really interesting, but also I love the confluence historically of, you know, MMA with pro wrestling there, and especially with, like, you know, Boss Rutan's, you know, involvement too, in a certain sense, just like, you know, Pancrase back in the day, like a shoot style representation of pro wrestling rules and everything like that. So, yeah, just some cool stuff. And on a localized level, you had quite a few, you know, pro wrestlers kind of in your competitive career there, like even in your debut fight there, like Tony Halm fighting, you know, WWF's Ludwig Borga back in the day and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Tony Halm, obviously good friends with Kurt Angle, who came from that amateur Olympic champion, amateur wrestling background, and has done very, very well in the WWE. Certainly Brock Lesnar, a guy that I bought who came from that world as well.
Oh yeah.
There have been a number of fighters, certainly in the Japanese market, that have done a lot of pro wrestling. Don Fry, Mark Kevin Randleman, all those guys. You mentioned Boss. You know, all those guys have gone over and done some pro wrestling in Japan, where it's certainly a little closer to MMA in the Japanese market.
I'm curious, like, just because of your prominence historically and everything like that, was there any WWE or even AEW offers that have come your way at all, or not so much? Like, would that be something you'd entertain or have a level of interest in, or perhaps not so much?
Yeah, they've never asked me about getting involved with that. I don't know if that's because of my amateur wrestling roots. I'm honestly not sure, but it was never something that was really appealing to me. I kind of realized at a very young age that it was choreographed. It wasn't real.
Yeah.
I think from the age of 10, I've been involved in real wrestling and in amateur wrestling. So it was just not something that I was really that interested in doing.
No, fair enough, man. Just thought to ask just based on the profile more so. But a former opponent back in the day, Vitor Belfort, he's, you know, still getting out there and going to be boxing Oscar De La Hoya soon there. Like, what are your thoughts on this recent wave of these kind of matchups, like the MMA versus boxing kind of, you know, recent permutation that we've seen as of late? And also just, I guess, specific thoughts on Belfort versus De La Hoya coming up for Triller.
Well, that's an interesting fight. Obviously, Belfort, in my mind, seems like a much bigger athlete than De La Hoya. De La Hoya's been out for how long? Quite a while.
Yeah.
Where Belfort's been a little more active in MMA. Belfort was always a fantastic boxer. He had some great boxing skills and background from Brazil, trying to make their Olympic team for boxing. So I think that of all these crossover matchups, that's probably one of the more interesting ones. I know Tito's got Anderson Silva coming up, I think, on that same card. Obviously, we just saw Tyron Woodley and Jake Paul fight. And, you know, that's a little, you know, a little stranger fight, maybe. It's interesting that Jake Paul runs his mouth a lot, but he doesn't seem to really pick any real boxers to fight. He's always wanting guys with a strong wrestling background. So, you know, probably a wise decision on his part. I believe that Tyron would have had to have knocked him down to win that fight. They're not going to let that guy lose a decision. He's making them too much money, let's be honest. So, you know, if it takes a guy like Jake Paul to shine a light on and poke Dana White about fighter pay, then good for Jake. And it's certainly one of the things that I've talked openly about almost from the beginning of the company buying the UFC brand back in 2001. So, now we're starting to see guys like Francis Ngannou, you know, John Jones, some of the other high-level guys recognize that we're not getting paid as much as we should be getting paid in mixed martial arts. And that comparison is being highlighted even more as we see more of these crossover boxing matches between mixed martial artists and boxers.
Yeah, and even anecdotally, you know that well too, just like past instances, you've been a reigning UFC champion, and sometimes you almost have to go outside the promotion to, you know, get paid to a certain degree, like the Ensign in a way days and stuff like that.
Yeah, those were the good old days.
Yeah.
Ensign was my first loss in the sport. He caught me in an arm bar in that Shuto match in Japan. Those losses are very important. Those are things that I embraced and never shied away from. I learned more from those losses than I ever did from the fights I won.
Oh, yeah, no doubt, man. I mean, you captured the belt remarkably quick at the time. And, like, yeah, historically, even beyond that loss, definitely showing that learning curve of taking what you need to take from it there. But I want to be mindful of your time and the rest of your schedule, man. I mean, I could talk to you for quite a while, just being, you know, that I've been an MMA fan for quite a while. But I do want to be mindful of your time. So to that point, is there anything you might want to add sort of as a parting thought as we're wrapping up here, man?
Very excited for the PFL Finals, October 27th in Hollywood, Florida, at the Seminole Hard Rock. I'm also very excited. I just got my contract in the script for Expendables 4. So heading to Europe to start shooting the next installment of the Expendables franchise, and happy to be back, getting the band back together, so to speak. So looking forward to that as well. The script is crazy, just like all the others. So I think everybody's going to love this film.
Well, that was actually the question that my dad had when I'd mentioned to him that I was talking to you, because, like, we used to watch your fights back in the day, and my dad was like, oh, you should ask Randy if Sylvester Stallone's a nice guy. He seems like a good dude.
Yeah, I like Slot. He's a very smart guy. You know, obviously he's coming under a lot of fire right now with this cancel culture because he moved to Florida and now he's become a member of Mar-a-Lago, the golf club that Trump owns down there. So, there's such crazy derangement, certainly in the Hollywood circles with our former president that kind of hate to see him getting bashed on like that, but it is what it is. He's a tough guy and a very, very smart guy, so I'm sure he's going to take it all in stride. I'm looking forward to seeing him here this next month, getting back together and doing some filming and getting another great Expendables in the books.
Yeah, well, glad you have that lined up. And yeah, to reiterate your earlier sentiment, also I'm looking forward to seeing this season of PFL get wrapped up. A lot of incredibly intriguing tournament bouts. But again, really appreciate the time, man. This was an awesome interview. You're a guy I've watched for quite a while. So yeah, thanks so much. Much appreciated. And you just enjoy the rest of your day, man. Best of luck with the charity bike ride there and all that.
You bet, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate you. Take care. Be well.